We read often of women in the Bible, and frequently they are presented or represented as that aspect of us that has the divine inner power of God. And frequently they are represented as having no husband. And that typically means that the internal expression, the life of God, has not yet come forth into demonstration, into manifestation. And faith is our key to releasing this inner light into the outer form. As a young man, and I think all of us who are raised in the secular world probably felt this way, I would have questioned or reported without giving much thought to the question that I have no faith in anything at all. And that's what I would have said, and that's how I would have responded to the questions. I would have told you that I operated solely from a material basis on the material plane, and that whatever I saw that was in existence, I either had to make do with it or do without. The thought that with my mind, heart, and prayer, I could bring things into realization was an alien concept to me. And I thought things were just that simple. And of course, how wrong I was, and how wrong we all are, and how wrong we find out we are later in life. We find out how wrong we are to have adopted such an attitude. For you see, we always have faith in something. It doesn't really matter whether it is the things that are unseen or the things that are seen. Our minds and our hearts are always directed toward a particular aspiration or purpose. Now, at a younger time in my life, my aspirations were material. My purposes were material driven. In other words, I had faith, but in material conditions. I would not have called it faith because these were things that were apparent to my physical senses. But it was faith nonetheless. For after all, I was not guaranteed that if I were to go to law school, I would even understand what the teachers were talking about. Nor was I told that if I went to law school, I would in fact graduate. I would in fact understand what the subject matters were. Nor was I told that I would in fact pass the bar exam in any jurisdiction. Nor was I told that I would in fact start practicing law as a way to earn a living and actually do it. None of that was laid out for me. None of that was guaranteed. None of that is promised in any sort of law school application or in any other school for that matter. In fact, with law school, it's almost just the opposite. They almost seems like they're trying to make you fail. But it is that way with all walks of life. We start on a path hoping to achieve an end, and we have faith in our abilities and the program material, and that will see us through to an ultimate conclusion. What is that if it isn't faith? For example, if we start out on a trip, we can start out traveling from Washington, D.C. to Los Angeles, whether it's by car, train, or airplane, and we have a general direction. We have a ticket. We have faith that the roads, the network, the transportation network, the highways, the byways, the mechanical systems, the mechanical conditions will all bring us to our destination, and all we have to do is put ourselves in the seat on the vehicle and we will get there. But all that is at its root core is faith. For there is no guarantee that once we start out on the road or on our journey that we would ever reach our destination. And if we truly felt that we had no faith, why, we'd go nowhere at all. And then you see a wonderful point comes. We begin to understand that faith is fundamentally a spiritual concept. It's not the type of thing that we can see, touch, taste, feel, smell, or think about. In fact, faith is essentially saying, if you put your mind and heart onto a direction and believe, then if you do the work or take the action, you'll get there. You'll probably reach your goal. And that is faith. We're constantly having faith in the things that are unseen. We're constantly having faith in the laws of the universe that are unseen. And we have faith that they will work because we see others so working them. We see other people getting on an airplane. We don't know how they work, most of us anyway. And we see people arrive at their destination. And so we want to go there too. We buy our ticket and we assume it's going to happen. But you see, that's deduction. We're deducing from a material outcome what will probably happen. Now, given that faith is a readily apparent concept, the question then becomes, to what do we put our faith? Before adopting and owning the concept of faith, you believe in material laws. You could see the disciples in the boat had it this way. They had faith in the water, in the laws of buoyancy to protect them. But when the seas became troubled and the waters became rough, and it began to appear to them that the laws of buoyancy were no longer going to apply, they had to go and raise the Christ consciousness within themselves and say, "Help me, Lord, do you not care that we are drowning?" That's a magic moment. You can actually use this if you're on a plane that becomes turbulent. You can recall the scene. And you will soon hear a rebuke say, "How is it that you can have so little faith?" That transformational moment, we are suddenly being called upon to rely on faith in God, in the unseen. And that is a transformational experience. The disciples shifted their faith. They shifted their focus. They changed their faith in the material laws of the waterways into the spiritual laws. The Pauline letters in our New Testament speak of faith, and they speak of faith as in faith of Jesus. And that's contradistinct from faith in Jesus, which is frequently misinterpreted. It is the faith of Jesus that we want to develop. H.B. Jeffrey speaks of the strange encounter in Acts of Philip and the eunuch. Now, a eunuch had been raised before in the Old Testament scriptures, specifically in the very scrolls of Isaiah and specifically in the scrolls of Jeremiah. A eunuch was typically in those days somebody who protected the queen, protected the treasures. They didn't have to worry about the eunuch causing any impurity in the bloodline, so to speak. So the eunuch was a person of trust at a human level. A eunuch in the Metaphysical Bible Dictionary is representative of that point of no gender, no reproduction, a thought from which the capacity to increase life as form has been eliminated. Now, Philip comes upon the eunuch and he is reading Isaiah 53, which we read in our call to worship section this morning. And he questions Philip, "Who is this him who is oppressed, afflicted? And who is this him who shall prolong our days?" And Philip talks about faith of Jesus, and he is baptized and transformed. Mary Baker Eddy, our spiritual ancestor, if you will, for after all she taught Emma Curtis Hopkins, answers the question of whether the eunuch's salvation depends on a belief of Jesus as the Son of God or a belief in Jesus as Son of God. And she answers it by saying that it is more than a faith in who Jesus was or is. Rather, it is a firmness in the understanding of the eternal unity of God and man. It is to be firm in the conviction that life of God is within us all. This is the faith of Jesus. As Jeffrey writes, it is the faith of intelligence, which we are capable that exceeds our intellect. Imagine that, an intelligence that exceeds our ability to intellectually get there with our mind. Faith of Jesus awakens this and puts it into practice, to a practical effect. And we are looking for practical applications of this faith all the time, from which we can continue to deduce lessons that will help us grow in our faith. In her book, Every Man's Search, a medical doctor named Rebecca Beard wrote about the transformation of her medical practice, devoted to treatment of diseases through medical means, into a spiritual one. And she writes in her transformation as to how she became a spiritual healer. Now, Dr. Beard was friends of Glenn Clark from the Camps Farthest Out. We have these books here in our library. In her book, she related a particular story that I found compelling with respect to faith and the faith of Jesus rather than the faith in Jesus. Although the way she tells the story, we need to be careful to keep our constructs in mind. Now, she began working through her practice and they began to shift their means of treatment of diseases from medicines, operations, to spiritual forms of intervention. And she began to see that she was having some success in provoking healings through solely spiritual means. But at some point, she began to wonder, you know, there's this thing out there called cancer, and we've never really tried our methods on anything that gripping. And as she entertained that in her thoughts, lo and behold, a woman appears with an advanced stage of stomach cancer. Her name was Alice, and she was from Leavenworth, Kansas. And she appears, and she has such a large tumor in her abdomen, she looked like she was 9 months pregnant. They had weighed it. It was about 30 pounds in weight. Now, Dr. Beard calls this the headless horseman because it frightened her. And the patient was in the grip of fear as well. In any event, when asked by Alice if she could treat her through spiritual means, her mouth said, "Why, yes, of course." In her heart, she said, "Lord, help me in my unbelief." Now, the battle was half won at this point, if you think about it, because here's the woman in great need, the patient that is, and she has faith in Dr. Beard's spiritual healing practice. Now they're looking at this woman's abdomen, they see how big the tumor is, and although her conscious mind, Dr. Beard's, was, "Yes, I can help you," her subconscious mind is at work in the wrong way. However, the patient herself said, "I believe we can do this." Dr. Beard said, "I want to see it come forth." So the patient went off back to her home and began to embark upon spiritual healing. Once she got home, she canceled all of her social engagements. She did simple things around the house, but that was it. She rested, she walked in the open air, she read her Bible, she sang hymns and praised. And every day she did this for months, but nothing happened. Suddenly, though, the miracle happened. One night while asleep, she had a vision. and her vision was the disciples asleep while Jesus came down from the mountainside from his lone vigil of prayer. And he looked at her, and she looked at him, and she saw his face, and it was full of sorrow. But he looked over at the sleeping men and looked back at her and smiled. Immediately, Alice says, the scene in her vision changed, and suddenly now it was the day of the crucifixion, she says, and the cross was being lowered into the hole that had been dug for it. She saw that the master's body was already nailed upon it, and she was concerned how the jar would hurt him. And she cried out, "Oh, Jesus," and put up her hand to steady his body and ease his suffering. And at that moment, her hand dropped onto her abdomen, and she awoke. And it was 3 a.m, propitious time. And she realized that her abdomen was now perfectly flat. The huge tumor was gone. She felt all around for moisture, thinking something had passed, but the bed was dry, and there was no pain. And her spirit rejoiced, and she knew something wonderful had happened. And reporting this to her husband and her medical doctor, she said, "I told you that God was going to take care of me, and see what he has done." And this appeared to be an instantaneous healing, and no one could explain it. Dr. Beard writes that she wanted to see something happen which she could not explain through spiritual means or other means, and God had indeed answered her prayer. And for the next 12 years, the Kansas City Star would write about this miraculous healing on each January on the anniversary of it. Now, it was a real-world example and a relatively recent example of faith, but notice that at no point in time did the patient, the one seeking spiritual healing, ever waver in her faith. Notice, too, that Dr. Beard believed that the healing could take place by mere spiritual means, and notice further the amount of time that the patient took in preparation before the healing could take place, and notice further the amount of time that the patient looked on high in an effort to turn her mind away from the problem, but on God. And many months went by and nothing had happened. But what I think was happening was what we do here. It was a preparation. A preparation was being set. Preparation work was being done. We were putting our minds and thoughts of disease behind us. We put our problems out of our mind. And we place our thoughts so completely on God that God appears. To Alice, it appeared in the form of Jesus. And she, offering her assistance, was willing to give up something in return, meaning she was willing to look outside of herself to provide assistance. Remember, at the time of the crucifixion, Jesus was considered a betrayer by the empire and by the established religion. Anybody seen to be offering assistance would probably have been punished as well. Even the disciples had run away. And yet there she is, offering up her whole body and soul for the sake of Jesus, right out of Isaiah 53. And that was whom she was now one with and enjoyed the healing. H.B. Jeffrey, in his book Mystical Teachings, speaks about healing through spiritual means and says it this way. He says, in speaking of Jesus of Nazareth, it was by his recognition of the omnipotence of his divinity, his divine self, that he was able to rise up and perform the only divine task that was ever performed on earth. That is, he offered to take onto his own body all of the consequences of our mistakes and of everybody's mistakes. This is our divine self in action. We are able to see to it that we may be forgiven wholly of all our errors and personal characteristics and the effects of those errors that are still going on. Jesus, through his faith, was able to atone and know that it would bring about a healing influence. This was foretold in the 53rd chapter of Isaiah. And the key there is surely the language that foretells that he would have borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. And that is the job of our divine self, for us to tap into it, reach into it, and let it do its work. In Bringing Healing Through Spiritual Means, I mentioned in our offertory section, Emmett Fox has a prescription. He says, take in the thoughts of God so wholly, so completely, so fully, that you can think of nothing else. And then, when you have reached that state of consciousness, you will see that anything that you ask for will be given unto you. This is another example of the necessity of you having faith and the faith that heals. Fill yourself up to the brim, like the stone pots at the wedding feast of Cana. In Divine Science, its principle and practice, in the glossary section, faith is described as acceptance of the wisdom, love, and security behind and within the process of creation. In other words, the divine self. Recognition of a universal integrity so complete and so inevitable that human doubts are intuitively dissolved. The founders encourage us to pray and depend upon God as the source of life. That is the basis in which we can align our motives and our faith aright. And the purpose is to bring into our awareness that God is manifest in our lives right here and right now. And so whenever we feel sick, lack, or any other limitation, we know undoubtedly it is coming from a wrong and habitually wrong subconscious condition that has to be corrected. And we do not realize, or which we seem unable to remove. That's because we've grown up with it all our lives. It is then that we may need to call upon someone who is firmly established in truth to help us rise above our own false premises and false conclusions. And if we can't find a live human being to call, well, we have written examples all around us. The woman being treated by Dr. Beard put her faith in the methods of Jesus and his ways. H.B. Jeffrey would counsel us to put our faith in the laws of spirit that reward or answer if our whole mind and heart is stayed on thee. Fox, Emmett Fox, put your whole mind and heart into God, and then return to the matter at hand. And when you have returned with the divine power on display, the divine power that was always in you, that just needed to be brought to the surface, well, you may find, as I did, that the problem has disappeared. In each of our examples, our faith is removed. Our faith is moved from ourselves and our sense evidence. We take it off of ourself. We place our faith in the other, or better still, on God. And then the miracle happens. And then the healing occurs. Let's take a few moments now to sit still in a group meditation. We'll just relax, take in one or two cleansing breaths. After each breath, we let the breath out slowly and think about nothing other than God, God's presence, God's power, the faith that Jesus had. In doing so, we cry out, you answer me when I call, O God. You have given me relief when I was in distress. You do not love vain words, but you respond to my whole heart. You do not seek revenge against those who anger you. You have placed joy in my heart. I will lie down and sleep in safety. You make me dwell in the safety in your shelter. You are my refuge, my fortress. It is in you whom I trust. You deliver us from the snare of the fowler, from the pestilence, from all manner of disturbance. You do not fear the terror of the night, nor the arrow that flies by day. Lord, we make you our dwelling place. Lord, you are our refuge. No evil shall come upon us, no plague in our consciousness. You command, O Lord, that we are guarded, we are protected. At all times you tread on our erroneous thoughts, fears, temptations. You hold us fast in love. When we call to you, you answer, and you provide us with long life and show us salvation. Amen. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May he cause his light to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. Turn within now and acknowledge him so that he may lift your consciousness and give you his peace. Amen. Go in peace and bring faith with you. Get more realization of it as you put your whole thoughts and whole hearts on God. Have a blessed week.